It's the Gadget Grill for February 22nd, 2009.
Yes, it is, and a very good evening to you all. How are you today?
I'm okay. It's, you know, it's kind of warm and cold and hot, and it was kind of cool, yeah?
It is. It has been an unbearably hot day today.
You were inside, weren't you?
No, I was outside, and I just didn't like the heat at all. Very hot, very sweaty, and I have a cold, so if I sneeze during the show, please, I offer my apologies in advance. What have you been up to?
I've been playing with some headphones this weekend. Yeah, got some headphones. I'm playing this weekend, and I've been reviewing some backlog, which should have been on the website earlier the week. Sorry about that. Yeah, been just writing reviews, spending time with my girl. Yeah, basically just enjoying myself. On the show tonight, we've got slightly different stuff. We've got one thing on the show tonight that I was reviewing this weekend, which are the headphones.
Okay, what else?
Some new headphones. Tonight we're going to be talking about home audio, basically getting a home studio up and running. We'll talk about the basics and some of the stuff you can use, including some free software that's out.
Okay.
Yeah, you've been playing with this stuff.
I've been playing with that, and I've got absolutely no idea how to use it, but why should that stop me?
Yeah, exactly. Why should that stop any of us?
Exactly.
You know, there's only one way to learn, that's by playing with some stuff.
Get your hands dirty.
Or as dirty as they can be when you're using a clean keyboard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got some news, as usual. And yeah, it's your regular sort of packed show on the Gadget Grill. First up, we've got Goldfrapp. Have you got a problem there?
I have a problem. I can't find the music that we have for today.
That's nice.
I'm just wondering whether I did something very, very silly at home this week.
Oh, no.
Yes, I'm just wondering about that. Let me
see. Can you check that, please?
I am just trying to check that right now. All right. So you can start doing the news.
I'll start doing the news because it looks like my producer has forgotten to produce.
Yes, I did something very stupid. So none of the music that you have lined up we have, unless you put it onto a CD or on a... No? Okay, we're going to ad-lib with the music today.
Great.
I'm sorry.
That's great, Dad. Okay, and I've deleted a whole bunch of music. Let's start with the news first. Do you have any music left on that thing?
I've got music from previous weeks, so we can go with anything from previous weeks if you want to choose any of that. But let's do the news to start with.
All right, let's do some news right now. Okay, next time, could you actually do your job?
Oh,
this
yeah.
This is why you don't get paid, because. I've got some news about Windows. Is anyone still using Windows 7? I'm using Windows 7.
I'm still playing with Windows 7. What do you got?
Okay, well, Windows 7 has got a likely release date for release candidate anyway coming out of April 10th.
Okay.
Yeah, April 10th. April 10th, that's pretty close for a release candidate for most people. But yeah, that's possible coming out. If you haven't played with it, you can't really download it anymore. I'm sure there are other ways for people to give it to you. Not like I'd ever promote that, but you can easily check out Microsoft's website and see the screenshots of it, or I might put a video up later on this week. It's a really impressive little operating system. Basically does what Mac OS does for a PC, and it looks really good. It's really solid. I guess I'm leading with the news today since you got your hands full trying to find stuff.
Yeah, I'm just having a look at what I've done and what I've screwed up, and it's exactly what I thought I did. Silly me.
You didn't copy music over, did you?
I took it directly from the source rather than copying it over, yeah, but that's okay because some of it I still have here on this machine anyway.
Okay. So, coming out of Europe, there's this plan to get a single standard phone charger out, basically. And one of the biggest problems a lot of mobile phone people find is that there are so many freaking mobile phone connectors. Like, Nokia has their little tiny, almost AC-DC adapter sort of thing. Samsung's have this cross between an elongated HDMI cable and a micro USB. BlackBerry have a cross between a micro USB or a mini USB, depending on what you have. There's all these. The iPod has the iPod dock. And in Europe, the European Commission is trying to get a single standard USB, your standard phone charger, which will probably end up being micro USB or mini USB.
A micro USB is what it looks like.
Yeah.
That's the preferred way from what I'm seeing.
It's looking like a way to try and, you know, get it approved, because I don't know about you, I'm kind of sick of having a different phone charger for every phone. And we got a lot of phones in the grill. Like,
yes,
we get our fair share of phones because we review. And
well, a typical family might have three or four mobile phones in the family, and every one of them would have, unless everybody buys the same phone, everyone's going to have a different charger, and you've got to you know, sort of you're fighting over what charges go where and all sorts of stuff like that. Not very good.
Especially when you consider that, like, okay, we've got some Sony Ericssons at home. They contain the Sony Ericsson proprietary pop port at the bottom. We've got a couple of iPhones. There's the Nokias, some Motorolas, which have the mini USB. I've seen a BlackBerry, which has the micro USB, and there's probably a Samsung somewhere else. So that's a whole lot of different ports to have out of your computer. Oh, out of your wall.
That's
so
right.
one big thing doing that would be kind of cool. Have you got any news over there?
I've got lots of news here. In Brazil, they're doing a rollout of a desktop virtualization. This is going to be in the schools where they can have one PC drives 10 user desktops concurrently.
Cool.
So this is, you know, sort of like you can have 30 students in a classroom and they're only using three computers in the classroom to service those 30 students.
That's really cool.
Isn't it? And
also makes it a lot harder to, you know, have all these endangered security networks on these for these computers because you only have three per class.
That's right.
It'll also be cheaper.
In fact, it is a lot cheaper. The actual cost of the hardware to run it is $50 per seat. Plus, of course, you need a monitor, mouse and keyboard for each of the workstations, but a monitor, mouse, keyboard, and $50.
That's nothing compared to
$500-$600 for each computer. That's right. So that's from Canada-based Userful and Thin Networks in Brazil. That's what they're doing. They're talking about 356,000 virtual desktops.
Can I tell you about this really cool concert that's happening in Toronto?
Oh, please do.
Really cool concert happening in Toronto for the deaf. That's right.
Pardon?
Yeah, for a trust you to have a joke that bad. Concert for the deaf. Students at Ryerson University have created a chair that's filled with speakers and vibrating devices, and the idea is that the music that's going to be played here is going to be vibrated to these people, which is really cool. Not just that, there'll be open captioning interpreters there.
Right.
So it's basically like synchronized swimming, but with sign language. Synchronized sign language swimming.
Synchronized drowning, I like to refer to it as.
Not with this. It's a really cool idea. So if listener happens to be in Toronto, it's on the 5th of March at Clinton's Tavern, and it's very cheap. It's $5. Go there if you want to see one of the first concerts for the deaf.
That sounds very, very good.
How does it sound very, very good?
Because it sounds very, very good.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, another story that I've got is the BBC. Okay. More often in the news for hassling others over the misuse of BBC copyrighted material on the web. But they've been hassled for copyright themselves.
Really?
A story quietly broken by Bitter Wallet. The BBC is getting a taste of its own medicine. Mike Bailey, a semi-pro photographer from Birmingham, has taken what he believes to be by far the best Birmingham nighttime skyline photo available to view on the web. The BBC agreed because after Mike posted the image to Flickr, he noticed it also appeared on the TV as a backdrop during a Live from Birmingham story on BBC News.
Weird.
I know.
That's good of them.
Naturally, Mike was more than a little miffed, and contacted the BBC, who offered him the princely sum of £75 for the copyright misuse oversight.
Huh.
Mike did not accept the offer, as he found this a derisory offer. Let's see, what else?
Yeah, go and find some stuff. Yeah, go on.
Yeah. No. Basically, the BBC claimed it was an error. They were testing some new stuff, and that was just something that was put up as a backdrop for testing this new equipment, and they forgot to delete it when they went live.
Right. We haven't
mentioned
possibly the biggest news story of the week, which is
no, we haven't.
The Pirate Bay, one of the world's probably the world's largest and largest known torrent site the web has ever seen. It's kind of hard to explain on community radio just what the Pirate Bay is. How would you describe it on community radio, on any radio?
Well, what it is, what the Pirate Bay is, it is a place where people go where they can track torrents. Now, torrents, a lot of people think of torrents as being ways to get illegal software.
It's not necessarily the case.
Well, yeah, there may be illegal software there, illegal references there, but there's a lot of legal references as well. And the Pirate Bay is just one repository where it contains a reference that if you go to this particular IP address, you can get this particular file.
There's a giant lawsuit happening right now in Sweden against the Pirate Bay facilitators. And this is basically held from a lot of the major studios in America, the International Federation for Phonographic Industry, I think that's what it's called, IFPI. Many others.
Federation for Pornographic Industry?
No, it's phonographic, I'm pretty sure of that. And the interesting parts about these lawsuits, or this case represents pretty much some of the most fundamental things with copyright on the internet. And it's so weird watching this. If you actually, if you search this up, the Pirate Bay lawsuit or case on Google, you find that the prosecution is in no means ready for a case like this. In the second day of this, on the first day, seats were being scalped. That's how popular this is. On the second day,
it's called entertainment.
Yeah, the second day, 50% of the charges were dropped just due to how bad the prosecution's defense was in something like this. So it's worth keeping up. We'll keep you up to date with stuff that's actually happening with that.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting and fun case because the prosecution seems to have well and truly screwed up.
Yeah, it's problematic when you try to go against the internet and you're not ready for it because, to be honest, the internet and its people using it, like hackers, like people just using legal torrents and legal systems like that, don't want to be targeted just for the hell of it. Piracy is not killing music sales. In fact, there have been studies to prove that. Things like DVD sales are. So anyone who wants to get pissed off at DVD sales, please go right ahead.
Okay, let's play some music.
Oh, you have some.
I have some music. I'm going to play San Severino and Exactamo, if that's okay with you.
I guess it'll work.
Okay, that'll do for the moment.
À la recherche de la légèreté sous une fine pluie dense et tiède, pensant trouver la fluidité coulant doucement comme de l'eau claire dans un ciel gris foncé, transpercé d'éclairs, c'est un tonnerre.
It's the Gadget Grill on 88.1 Radio 2RDJ, also available online at www.radio2rdj.com. And if you want to find out anything we're talking about tonight, or just check out some of the stuff we've talked about last week and the week before that, pretty much just the 12 shows, so we've got a fair amount of stuff that we're talking about, head to www.gadgetgrill.com.au.
Yes, you should, and we're going to talk about our feature for today, which is setting up a recording studio in your home.
I should mention ahead of time, if you are setting up a radio studio in your home, best not to leave your music at home.
Well, if you're at home, then your music will be at home, so
which is kind of cool.
Going to be a problem. But yeah, setting up a studio at home with computers today, it is all too easy to actually go and do this sort of thing. It is really just so easy to.
We should mention right now that just because it's easy and the sort of steps we're about to tell you, just because they sound easy to do, doesn't mean you're going to be this great master audio Phil Spector in your home. Having that sort of talent just takes, talent.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I always say with some of the music that gets forwarded to me to play on my various shows is the fact that you can set up a recording studio in your bedroom.
Yeah, it doesn't often mean you should.
Doesn't mean that you should. Talent helps if you've got musical ability. That said, what do you need? You need a computer, you need an audio interface, and you need some software. Would that sum it up?
That would sum it up. I mean, that's probably the most basic way of putting it, but that would be one of the ways of doing it. Now, a lot of people write in and talk to us and say, do we need a Mac? Do we need a PC? Well,
either works.
Either work, and you can run Windows, Mac, or Linux. Now, obviously, if you run something like Mac, your options are a little bit limited. You either need something that handles Pro Tools or maybe Logic Studio. That's a fantastic set of tools that Apple released for about $500.
What I find interesting, though, is that when the Macs came out, they were originally the best tool, the best computer for graphic work and the best computer for sound type stuff. And today, that's all turned around and you get better tools on the PC.
It's half true because a lot of Mac purists will happily say, you have to use Pro Tools. Pro Tools is one of the most known pieces of software for Mac users. But these days, a lot of people are using Windows and Linux. Linux provides free software, and Windows provides a lot of paid-for solutions like Adobe Audition, Steinberg Wavelab, Sony SoundForge. These are all great applications, each do different things. Steinberg Nuendo, things like that. And there are more options on PCs and Linux systems. Linux is free. We'll talk about Project 64 in a minute.
64 Studio.
Sorry, not, I call it Project 64 based off, I think that's what its code name was. And there are more options available. If you do get a Mac, chances are you've got this all-in-one amazing machine that will look great if you take your home studio outside.
And the Mac works pretty well out of the box too, because it comes with some fairly good software as well that's fairly usable that you can record. And you can get a copy of, for instance, Audacity, install that, and that'll help you do your recording. Audio interfaces. Well, first of all, just getting back to the PC... for the PC, if you've got a good sound card, that helps.
Well, actually, we can talk about that because most PCs these days come with a motherboard sound, and that's what most people get. You get the sound that comes from basically the part of your computer that controls your CPU, your memory. That's not great sound. There's a lot of
it works, but just barely. Yeah, but don't expect.
There are some instances that'll prove stuff. Me wrong. Like MSI have an amazing motherboard out that has. That has a Creative Sound Blaster built into it, like an Audigy X5. And that's obviously a motherboard that goes well above and beyond what it's supposed to do. But that's very rare. So you need an audio interface, something to connect it. And you will if you have a Mac, a Linux, or a Windows PC. This is going to be as common as it gets. You need this.
Yeah. Now, there's different types of audio interfaces. With USB, you can get some USB sound cards. I've got one that is it's made by Behringer. It's called a UCA202. That's the
it's about $100 video card, isn't it? $100 sound card.
It cost me about $55, in fact. And yeah. It's USB. It's got two RCA in, two RCA out, and a headphone out. And in fact, the sound that you're listening to for all the music on this show comes through that from the computer. It's very portable. And it is a very useful device, and for, you know, $50-$60, it's bloody good value.
And likewise, you can always spend up to, say, $1,500 if you want. We've got a member of our family has got what's called a Focusrite, which is a massive, it's a Sapphire Pro, I think it's what, 14 in, 14 out or something?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous amount of inputs, and it uses a FireWire input. Now, using FireWire isn't such a good thing these days. You can thank Apple for this one because...
They've screwed their computers with how they're interfacing.
FireWire was originally an Apple standard. That's a good thing because FireWire is fast and stable and it provides power. But which essentially means that if you're running your FireWire sound card, which draws a lot of power, you don't need to plug it into the wall. You can run it off FireWire, which USB doesn't quite allow for.
Yeah.
But on the new MacBook Pros and the MacBooks, FireWire has been completely removed, or with the exception of FireWire 800, which is not what these sound cards are designed for.
No.
They're designed for the lower FireWire 400 standard, which is a different plug.
Now, one of the reasons why you would use one of these audio interfaces, either FireWire or the USB ones, is because they do provide better quality sound. And with the FireWire ones as well, they provide better interchangeability of the data, so you can actually control... your instrumentation through the audio interface, through the interface back to the actual instrument, if you want to, from the computer that actually has communications from the instrument back through the interface to the computer. So you can start it, stop it, have it play music and all that sort of stuff.
There are some interesting cases, actually. Gibson have a guitar, so do Behringer, that have basically the ability to plug in directly to your computer through USB mechanisms and get your sound out from your guitar straight into your computer without an audio interface. So if you have one of those, your audio interface is only really needed for, say, plugging in a microphone.
Right. Now, what about the interface that we had late last year, the USB mixer?
That's very different. There are these USB mixers out, and they've been out for a long time. Hercules had them. Mm-hmm. The one we had last year was a Belkin.
Belkin, yep.
I think M Audio do one, and I know there's another company.
Behringer do a couple as well.
Yeah,
now.
There are quite a few companies, and these are mixers that actually let you plug in multiple sound devices or an iPod. The iPod interface is sketchy these days because Apple software is controlled by Apple.
Yep.
But they basically allow you to plug in a mixer and a whole bunch of audio devices and control all from that thing. Behringer have a keyboard with that sort of stuff
built
into it.
They do, yeah. Just to give you a rundown on what some of these devices do, you can have two very high-quality microphones, a couple of high-quality microphones connected to them, plus maybe three or four different instruments, guitar, electronic keyboard, or you might want to mic up your drums or something like that. All of those can go through.
Or if you really want to be playful, you can get the Rock Band for the PlayStation 3 or for the Xbox. Plug it in using USB and you've got yourself a $160 electronic drum kit.
Yeah. Okay. So you got your computer, you've got your audio interface so you can move your sounds onto the computer. You've got to actually record it on the computer with some software. Audacity is a software that's free that works, and it works very well on the PC. I like to have Adobe Audition because that lets me... It's a logical interface that marries up to how you might expect recording to work, and you can record one channel or two channels at a time, and you can have different interfaces mapped to different channels, so you can do some fairly sophisticated recording. You can cut and paste and move music around and so on.
We should mention quickly that my dad, Gary, the one who's speaking right there, he's not an audio master.
Like, absolutely not. I make no claims of that at all, as you will find out in a moment.
Yeah, okay, sure. So in these sorts of instances, he's more or less an amateur, slightly more professional amateur, working away at these decks. And he's been playing with a piece of software, the 64 Studio, in the past week, which is a Linux-based piece of software.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm about to start talking about now. There's a number of ways that you can actually use this. First of all, the web address for this is www.64studio.com.
If you don't know what that is, we'll provide a link on the website later on.
Yep. Now, what they have is they've got a couple of different things that are available to you. It's basically a Linux distribution, the Debian Linux distribution, with a whole ton of pre-installed software. Now, all of the software that's pre-installed is geared towards helping you do your home studio, build your home studio and do your recording. I'll just go through through a small list of some of the stuff that's on there. They got Aeolus, they got ALSA, Modular Synth, that's a synthesizer. Audacity Sound Editor, it lets you record, edit.
Which is what you said was available for the Mac previously.
That's right. FMIT Tuner, if you got a guitar and you want to get it in tune. FMIT is like an electronic tuner that you have in your gig bag, except it's on your computer. GNOME, CD Master. GNOME, of course, is one of the interfaces that you get on Linux. CD Master, it lets you master your CDs. Sound Juicer CD Extractor, it'll let you rip your CDs. Virtual MIDI Keyboard. Say you got a picture of a keyboard on your screen, an electronic keyboard, like a piano.
And you can plug it into your MIDI keyboard. Say you've got a Korg or a Micro Korg or something like that.
Right. Zinad SubFX Software Synthesizer.
You don't even know what that is, do
you? I have absolutely no idea what it is, but it sounded good. And all of this comes for free.
We probably haven't mentioned Linux on the show. We should do it one of these times. Linux is free. It's an operating system that is built for free and it exists for free. And it actually has a lot of the things that Windows and Mac both are really built off of.
Yeah.
I mean, especially Mac, especially the new version of Mac OS, Mac OS X, and...
It's actually FreeBSD, but it's the same basic thing.
And Windows 7, they all share a lot in common with Linux.
Yeah.
So this is free stuff, and if you want to run this, you can run this on either a Mac or a PC.
You can run it on basically any PC, as long as you don't have an NVIDIA graphics card.
Really?
Yeah, they've got a problem with the NVIDIA drivers, and I couldn't run it on one of my machines for exactly that reason. I couldn't run the ISO, I couldn't run the install.
Okay, well, in this case, if you've got a really crappy computer, like something that runs on an Intel 965 video chipset, which
it'll
is
run.
A lot of stuff. If you've ever checked those HPs and Compacs that retail for $800 and look like they've got great parts, they've got a junk video card, I can guarantee you.
But it'll work.
It'll work with this.
Yeah, and to download, you can either download the Linux distribution, which means if you've got a spare computer lying around, you just install the distribution. Or if you have a computer that you don't want to touch, you can download what's called the ISO, which is a disk image. You burn that disk image using Nero or something like that to a CD-ROM, And you just use that as your boot image, and it'll boot straight into this system, and you will have your studio.
So we've basically explained how to record at home. I mean, all you really have to do now is go out, get yourself a mic, decent pair of headphones, which we'll talk about next.
Yep.
Decent pair of headphones, some talent. That's usually a good place to start.
And talent is the hardest thing to get.
If you've got a computer, you can do this with anything. We'll provide some links. You provide the talent. That's all there is to it.
On the subject of talent.
Yeah?
Frou-frou.
I think it's frou-frou.
Frou-frou. Okay, you tell me.
Shh. Sunbeam, stop tugging me. Pull that door shut quietly. Darling, what are you doing?
Wondering whether the funds will cover the next copy of Microsoft Office? Well, if you've got a Mac, Radio 2RDJ might be able to help you out. We're giving you the opportunity to win a copy of Microsoft Office 2008 for Mac, valued at over $800. It's not hard to win either. All you've got to do is create a slogan for your favorite 2RDJ program and submit it online at www.radio2rdj.com. Alternatively, you can fax your slogan to 97441088 or mail it to us at P.O. Box 1088, Burwood North, New South Wales 2134. Don't forget to tell us the program your slogan is for and include your name and contact details. The winning entry will be used on the air and score the copy of Office 2008 for Mac. Entries close on March the 1st, so get cracking.
...88.1 Radio 2RDJ. This is the Gadget Grill with Lee Stark and Gary Stark. And in case you didn't hear that advertisement, Radio 2RDJ is giving away a copy of Microsoft Office for Mac, courtesy of the nice people at Microsoft. All you have to do is write a slogan for your favorite show.
Which would be the Gadget Grill.
The Gadget Grill.
Are there other shows on this station?
Oh, there probably are. Colin's got a show coming up later, I think.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
One possible solution that you might not want to use would be something like the Gadget Grill, forgetting music but still running with everything else. Right,
yeah,
Dad?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Oh, how about the Gadget Grill? Blame Dad.
Blame Dad. Yeah, that's good, because usually it's blame Lee.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Gadget Grill, blaming everyone else but ourselves.
Yes.
We've got some headphone reviews right now.
We do.
I'm actually playing with one right now. It's hard to play with headphones. We've got two Plantronics. Plantronics do the headsets for NASA, actually. That's how good they are. They've been doing this stuff for ages, and they've been doing the headsets for NASA. And we've got two gaming headsets in here, and one's open, one's closed. And I'll explain quickly what that means. These are gaming headsets, so they have a microphone in them. They're very comfy. They've got these plush, cottony.
Well, these ones that you've got fit over the whole ear, and that's more comfortable than the ones that...
They're circumoral. That's the term you're looking
circumoral.
For. Circumoral.
Yes.
Compared to supraoral, which fit on top of the ear, basically.
They press your ear down, and these are much more comfortable.
These are very comfy. Your ear sits inside the little comfy bit, and they feel pretty good. They're very... They're stylish in the way gamers like style. They've got these little red lines around them, and I expect that if they had batteries, they'd light up. They don't.
Do they glow in the dark? No.
No, they don't, actually. They're just red. Okay. And they say on the side, Gamecom. Oh, there goes my news.
There goes his running sheet.
Anyway.
It walked away.
It has a microphone controller on the side, as well as a really easy-to-use and easy-to-look-at volume control. I actually owned the predecessor to these headphones and love those things to death.
And you have an interesting story about their support, in fact, haven't you?
It's not interesting, but it's really cool to note that Plantronics support is really good. Like, I had a... this is not the first pair of Plantronics I would have ever owned. Before this, I owned the predecessor. Well, 2 years ago, the predecessors, the first generation of them, broke on me through no fault of my own, which is kind of strange because I usually expect it to be some fault of my own.
Yep.
And I called up Plantronics, and they got me a brand new set, and I sent them the old ones. It was pretty much as easy as it got. There was no qualm about receipts or warranty or anything like that.
Just no questions asked. The customer is right. Let's support the customer and let's take care of him.
It was. These headphones are really nice. There's an open and closed version. The open ear versions, in my mind, the open ear ones are providing better sound, and that's because sound is being let out of the actual headphones themselves, which makes sense. If you're in a room full of people, probably not the best ones.
Is that like being in a dark room where if you open the door, you let all the dark out?
I really wish you'd shut up sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah. These headphones, the open-ear ones, seem to provide better sound, but if you're... For me, anyway, you, on the other hand, Dad, said that the closed ones were giving you better definition.
I thought that the closed ones sounded better, yes.
Yeah. Interestingly, though, while the open-air ones I'd expect to be producing more noise around people, I think they're producing about the same amount of noise when they're on your head.
Okay.
I don't see the open-ear as being hugely beneficial. Theoretically, the open-ear should sound better because of the noise they allow to let in and out, but I'm not seeing that here. I'll have a better test on the website later on this week.
Right.
They're pretty nice, though. I've got to be honest, very impressed with them.
Okay, so they're comfortable.
Comfortable, enjoy.
They sound good.
They sound good, and
a little bit too much bass for my liking.
I think, to be honest, that
because I like a flat sound. I like it.
Yeah, you like basic sound. It's great for gamers. Like I really can't recommend this for anyone else other than gamers and people who love bassy music. Like
on the subject. Okay, go on.
Yeah, like our Wednesday night crew who like bassy music.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the subject of music.
Yeah. Here's Eric someone.
Clapton and Reconsider, Baby.
Radio 88.1 Radio 2RDJ. This is the Gadget Grill with Lee Stark and Gary Stark. And actually in the studio right now is the one coming up after us, Mr. Colin.
Yes, he's hiding there in the corner. That's the corner that Peter usually takes refuge in. There it is.
Yeah. And right now, right now we've got a listener question, believe it or not. A listener... Jeff from Peninsula Bay, which is a really weird name for a place, considering that Peninsula is not a bay.
Jeff's a weird name.
It is a weird name. Jeff has called us in asking for what an effective wireless remote backup system would be. We've come up with an interesting answer for him, one that probably he won't see coming. As soon as my dad stops dying over there, could you stop dying for a minute?
I know. I'm just going to curl up in the corner and die quietly, I think. I've got to kick Colin out of the corner first.
Yeah. We've come up with a system of maybe using cloud computing, that system that allows you to, as we used as evidence a while ago, the Google Documents, the whole... Yeah, that didn't sound like you coughing at all.
No.
Yeah. Using the Google Cloud Network as an example, or using off-site files if you've got web space on, say, a web provider.
Well, just through your ISP. Through your ISP, you'll have a certain amount of space, and you can just move files that you want to keep a backup of, move them up to your ISP, and have the backup there.
Yeah,
very simple, very effective.
And it's using that new technology, cloud computing. You've got something you want to talk about quickly, I know.
Oh, yes. This one is fun. There's a bill before the Senate and the House in the United States that will make it a federal crime for anyone, including you, that's me, not to retain a log for 2 years of everyone who is connected to your wireless router within the past 2 years.
You hear that? Even though, because Dad doesn't live in America, he is still going to be targeted by this law.
That's right. So what this means is that you've got to keep a record of anybody who has used a dynamic IP address on your... basically, if you've got a wireless router, a wireless modem connecting to the internet, anyone who connects to it, you, me... Lee, at the station here, that's everybody who uses the internet here.
Last I checked, that was damn near impossible for most people. Most people don't have a setting like that enabled, and especially for people who... Here you go, Dad, say it. What was I going to say? Come on, say it.
I can't remember. What?
It's especially impossible if you lose power on your...
Well, yes, this is where it gets interesting, you see, because most of the routers will automatically keep a log, but the log is dynamic and only remains active while the router has power. Router loses power, the log goes away. Brilliant law that one will be. It is time for us to go.
It is. Next week we're talking about a new service that's basically going to be offered for the less fortunate.
The less fortunate. Children who are in hospital, who are ill. We went to a launch this week. It was absolutely magnificent, and the service is wonderful. This is...
basically Facebook for the less fortunate. It's a really good idea. It's social networking done with a really good purpose. The Australian Federal Police were down there. Everything about this smacks of brilliance. So we'll be talking about that next week. This is Jacques Lussier with Allegro from the Four Seasons to ease you into a classical Colin. You know, My name is Lee Stark.
I am Gary Stark. You've been listening to The Gadget Grill on Radio 2RDJ.
Have a good week.
www.radio2rdj.com. We'll be back next.
Or head to www.gadgetgrill.com.au.
If you want to, absolutely. We'll be back next Sunday night, 9 o'clock, hopefully with the right music installed on the computer.
Yeah, come on, do that next time. See you, everyone.